HJR 2, 2126, 2167, 2321, 2192, 2216, 2055, 2054, 2214, and 2218. We're going to start off right now with 2050.
2050 or 2250?
2250.
Legal counsel was to tell us, right? It was a procedure.
Yeah.
Where's counsel?
We don't have to.
They got a thing over there. We're doing terrible stuff.
Well, these are the ones we've already seen.
I don't know what the story is.
I have a point of order.
Regionally suspects. Now, we had a case that we read from in terms of what that means to tonight. What is
about that?
Could you? That is very important because otherwise they can't. They can
Valdez
be
there. And,
thank you. Just
very
here.
Did you read that? That means anything. It does to me, buddy.
Does it?
It said it's going to go crazy.
Oh, I'll show you your spam.
Yeah.
Okay,
what's the reason for the protest?
We're on 2250. This is the stop bill. Representative Courtney asked that we cite a case, make reference to a case here. Representative Courtney, can I have my case back?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Case, of course, is State versus Valdez. Valdez cites Terry versus Ohio. What this bill does is it brings the statutorily changes the Oregon statutes and allows essentially a Terry stop. I do not believe there are any amendments to this bill. Is that correct? I do not believe there are any amendments to the bill. There is some controversy on the bill. The chair will move the bill to the floor to do pass recommendation discussion of the bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Calhoun.
Who is the carrier of this bill? Who is the person who's carrying it before the full committee?
Carrier? Minnis? Representative Minnis? Bill.
Well, the bill before the full committee?
Yes.
Well, I am.
You are. If I might ask a question, Mr. Chairman, is in reference to House Bill 2250?
Certainly.
Was there any attempt at ascertaining the fiscal impact of this this bill upon the indigent defense funding in Oregon during the hearing and work session in the subcommittee?
The discussion in subcommittee, if I remember right, was to the effect that this would have a positive. I'm thinking another bill. No, there was no discussion that I remember of the fiscal impact of this bill. I'm thinking of 2251, the joiner bill.
He's got the.
There was no discussion
of fiscal impact.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
My reaction to the fiscal impact situation would be that this reflects on cases where the officer probably would have taken action anyway and legal activity would have ensued, but now we're making it clear that the officer should be allowed to be successful in doing what he's supposed to do.
Mr. Chairman, if I might comment.
Certainly, to the bill.
Certainly appreciate the comment from my colleague from Salem who practices workers' comp, and certainly will be coming to him on numerous occasions regarding workers' comp legislation this session. The crux of what I'd like to indicate, I did have arranged for 1 o'clock, although it was inappropriate because of our current committee rules, a person from the Oregon State Bar, who works in indigent defense, to comment on the fiscal impact of particularly 2250, but also the other two pieces of legislation that are coming before us today regarding criminal procedure. Unfortunately, obviously, we're meeting at 8 o'clock, which I've been fairly confused about our meeting schedule since we still haven't come to a firm schedule and apparently kind of move around at will. Therefore, he's not here to give us any testimony on what I thought was a valuable area in which we should have addressed in the subcommittee. I don't know if it's appropriate to make the motion at this time, but I would like to make a motion that all three of the bills, 2250, 51, and 52, be referred to the civil committee to be heard with the indigent defense package to ascertain how much money these are going to cost. I think I can tell you fairly simply from a criminal defense standpoint that there will be a heck of a fiscal impact on indigent defense because of these bills. We're going from what is now one standard in Oregon to three standards with reference to 2250. We're going to be working not only with the federal law, which is nebulous at best, and an Oregon statute, but also a thing out there called the Oregon Constitution, which some people like Hans Lindy seem to think means something. Also with reference to the area of stop, which they have determined with respect to roadblock stops and ruling with the Oregon Constitution. If we're not able, or if my motion to refer all three of the bills, if that's be appropriate, is not sustained or not affirmed by this body, I would ask that 2250 independently be referred to the civil subcommittee to work with in the indigent defense package. As I've been told, a number of other bills are going to be, because 2250 will have the most serious fiscal impact of the three bills. My information from the bar and with reference to our court administrator is that the court administrator, makes attempts to ascertain the fiscal impact of these bills with respect to indigent defense. There are going to be about 20 bills regarding indigent defense coming before the subcommittee, the civil subcommittee, which will be looked at together to try to work out a system that isn't going to go into debt or have to come to the e-board for millions of dollars. So I would move at this time that House bill, I think we, Mr. Chairman, if I might ask just a point of procedure, is it appropriate for me to move all three of the bills at this time, or just the one that's before us?
Well, procedurally, I'm not going to hold you to the rules, but I don't represent Calhoun, but for your information, from now on, either here or on the floor, one does not argue and then make the motion. One makes the motion. Once you start arguing, you can't make a motion. The formal, and this is for all of your sedition, on the floor or in committee, one makes a motion. The motion is placed, then one argues the motion. So once you start discussing the bill, you foreclose yourself from making a motion. I will not hold you to that today.
I was aware of that standard with reference to the floor. Is that also going to apply to this to this committee?
Yes.
Is that in the committee rules?
Well, it's in Mason's, which controls. But I'm not going to hold you to that today. I'm just trying to help out.
would it be appropriate that I make the motion for 2250 to be referred to the civil subcommittee to be looked at with the indigent defense package, or should I make the motion for all three of the bills?
The appropriate motion would be 2250. What you may say, you'd ask consent that all three be considered at once. The other two are not before us at this moment. However, you may ask unanimous consent to bring the other two before us at this moment. Do you wish to do that?
Mr. Chairman, if I might just address one bill at a time, I would ask that 2250 make a motion that 2250 be referred to the civil subcommittee to be evaluated for its fiscal impact, along with the full package of indigent defense bills which are coming through, which will be evaluated for fiscal impact by the court administrator and with the assistance of the Oregon State Bar.
Representative Calhoun moves House Bill 2250 to the civil subcommittee. Discussion of the motion. Representative Mannix.
I'll make one general comment, Mr. Chairman. If people want to know about my 14 years of attorney background, they can read my resume. It does not include only workers' compensation, but includes being an assistant attorney general for Oregon as well as for Guam, having been a law clerk for the Court of Appeals, and a few other things. And again, I'll be glad to share my resume if anybody wants to look at my background. As far as I'm concerned, fiscal impact is going to arise every time you get tight on crime, and sometimes it's an ethereal thing. In fact, I think I could find a fiscal impact in every single bill that goes through the legislature. Depends on whether or not we see a real-world fiscal impact or some theoretical impact. And in this case, I think we're talking theoretical impact because the benefits and the negatives are out there. We can argue about how many angels can dance on the head of the pin. So I'm opposed to referring this out to the committee.
Further discussion of the motion,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
Question for Representative Calhoun. Do you know of fiscal impact that this bill would have outside of the fiscal impact that Representative Manick suggests that simply would arise because there would be conceivably greater police activity, greater police arrests, greater strain on the system? Do you know of a specific fiscal impact aside from that?
The specific fiscal impact of this bill, just to give you an example, the current statute probably has about 500 cases citing to it. There are specific guidelines and rules that are laid out in those cases, giving police exceptions to make stops in emergency situations and other exceptions. If we do away with this statute and fall back into the nebulous area of federal law in one respect and statute in another respect, and then the Oregon Constitution in other cases, any one, two, or three of those areas could apply to any given situation, which is going to increase litigation overall in the system, regardless of whatever law we find to come out with in 5 or 10 years. And specifically in the near future, we'll have a great deal to say with respect to how many cases are brought forward, on what grounds, how much time the defense lawyers are going to have to spend on given pieces of legislation, and also the appeals that go up and which ones are heard by the Oregon Supreme Court and by the Court of Appeals. So this is basically an increaser in cost with respect to the litigation process, and certainly as a pro-attorney bill in that respect, and I would expect to make a good sum of money off of this if I continue to practice criminal defense after I leave the legislature.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
I have a question for our counsel. Yeah. Were these reviewed as to fiscal impact, these three bills?
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Robinson. Ms. Robinson.
These bills were considered by the Joint Interim Committee on Crime and Corrections during the summer. They were sent down to the Legislative Fiscal Office for review. It was the position of the Legislative Fiscal Office that although there may be some challenges to the particular standards and the wordings, that it was not possible to specifically identify what the costs, the increased indigent defense costs would be, given the fact that one could not calculate on a workload basis what the challenges would be, how many there would be, if there would be any. And so from the Legislative Fiscal Office position, there was not an identifiable legislative fiscal impact on any of the three bills that are before you this morning.
Representative Minnis, then Representative Miller.
Chairman, it's my personal opinion that the whole argument over the fiscal impact based on indigent defense is an argument that occurs in a vacuum. And it occurs in a vacuum simply because we all know that there's a bill that exists in this assembly that wants to double the entire cost of indigent defense. And yesterday in one of the other subcommittees, we heard a similar argument that there's a fiscal impact, and part of the reason for bringing the whole reason, for the whole idea of this impact up, was that they are trying to find or identify places to move in the budget to increase indigent defense. I think that in and of itself is a vacuum argument. It has no substance to it. It's going to go nowhere. In fact, if we continue to listen to those kind of arguments in this committee, we're going to be here until August or September.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having gone through these arguments for the past several years, I think it's time to once again move these through the House and therefore call for the question.
Can I close, Bruce?
Just close, Representative Callum.
I think that it's appropriate that the major crux of the reason I've raised this argument is because I asked whether or not the subcommittee had called people who would testify as to the fiscal impact. I've spoken with a number of them. One from the bar was going to be present today at 1 o'clock to testify. We're having an 8 o'clock meeting. We seem to be juggling these around, and I can't figure out precisely when our meetings are going to be. I hope that'll be corrected in the future. I'm also informed that the court administrator, who we pay a good sum of money to work for us, is a person that does a fiscal impact, unlike the revenue department, who obviously can't come up with any kind of notion of how much these are going to cost. They do fiscal impacts as towards increasing indigent defense costs and decreasing them. I think it would be appropriate to get some kind of notion from the bar, both prosecution, defense side, and also from our court administrator, who we pay a good amount of money to do these sorts of things for us, take that impact into the civil committee, along with the rest of the indigent defense package, and make our decision based upon a full ground of information rather than just a scanty information from a few people. This bill's been on a fast track, and this is a big part of the reason that we haven't been able to get full information on it. And I would certainly encourage everyone to send this bill to the Civil Committee for further review without sending us out on the, or without sending it out on the floor, where we might pass some bad legislation that's going to cost us a lot of money without good information on it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Clerk, call the roll, please. On the motion.
Representative Baum? No.
Representative Baumann?
No.
Representative Bryan?
No.
Representative Calhoun?
Yes.
Representative Calori?
No.
Representative Clark?
No.
Representative Courtney?
No.
Representative Edmondson?
No.
Representative Mannix?
No.
Representative Miller?
No.
Representative Minnis?
No.
Representative Mason?
No.
Further discussion on the bill? For the motion?
Representative Edmondson.
Well, I'm not a member of the criminal subcommittee, and of course, under our rules, we don't have testimony here today. I do have some serious questions about the constitutionality under Oregon's constitution of this particular bill, but I'm not, at this point, well enough advised to articulate those, and I suspect that when this goes to the floor, as I suspect it will, at that time there may be lively discussion. In fact, I'm looking forward to it. So with that comment, I just wanted to put that on the record.
Further discussion.
Well, may I just echo Representative Edmondson's comment and make the request that it would be my expectation from this committee that the strongest arguments in defense of the Constitution would be generated by the members of this committee.
Further discussion.
Chairman.
Representative Clark.
The Oregon Constitution is in a state of flux, particularly in the areas of search and seizure and of all individual liberty provisions. That has to do, I think, as much with perhaps maturity in our own constitutional identity, if I can put it that way, as it does with any ideological swings. I, for one, will be fully prepared to defend the constitutionality of this bill under the Oregon Constitution when it comes to the floor. But I just want to raise for the committee, this is an issue that will come to us again and again and again this session as we encounter criminal legislation. Justice Lindy, among others, has in several other areas, although I don't believe specifically in this area, has specifically said that the Oregon Constitution may be more protective of individual liberties than the federal constitution. I know of no case, I know of nothing even close to this particular bill where he has said that, other than general criminal procedure areas. And so I want to echo the comment that Representative Edmondson made, Representative Baumann made, and state the obvious, which is that this is an issue we're going to be going over again and again and again all session, and I suspect we're all going to know more about the Oregon Constitution by the time we're finished than we did when we began.
Further discussion? If not, the clerk call the roll on the bill.
Representative Minnis?
Yes.
Representative Miller?
Aye. Aye.
Representative Edmondson?
Aye.
Representative Courtney?
Yes.
Representative Clark?
Yes.
Representative Calori?
Aye.
Representative Calhoun?
No.
Representative Bryan?
Aye.
Representative Baumann?
No.
Representative Baum?
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Hi, thank you. It's good of you to be here. Representative Mannix.
You
saying I get to carry this, Mr. Chairman, or are you?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
You'll enjoy it.
House Bill 2251. This is the joinder bill. This bill was amended in subcommittee on line. Six. We need to adopt a technical amendment also, and I would ask the committee's acquiescence. We did not pick up at the time that the word indictment also, well, actually was amended on line 11. What they wanted to do was to substitute indictment or information, that phrase, for accusatory instrument. And I would ask your acquiescence that we also, on line 6, delete the word indictment and substitute accusatory instrument. That was not picked up. That should have been picked up. Another relatively cut and dried, cut and dried bill, in the sense that and we are going to a federal joinder standard. Any discussion of the bill? Anybody like to move the bill?
I move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix moves House Bill 2251 to the floor, do pass as amended. Representative Mannix, do you wish to discuss the bill a little bit?
We did have extensive discussion of this in the committee, and the amendment is, as already indicated by the chairman, just to clean up some language. We're really talking about a bill which is going to put Oregon on parallel with the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. The federal rules have proven to be reasonable to the needs of the defense, at least in the opinion of many of us. At the same time, they allow the prosecution to move cases expeditiously. I would also specifically like to state for the record that we are relying on interpretations to date of Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure 8A, which again, we're saying we are paralleling here. It's recognized that defense attorneys will have to file a motion to sever. It's also recognized, however, that the judge can take that under consideration and in any given case can sever. That is, allow the trials to be held separately. And from the discussion in the subcommittee, it appears that there will be a divergence of opinion as to this measure, along with many others, but the majority of the subcommittee felt that it was appropriate to allow this procedure.
Just for reference, and counsel, I think you have the notes, the federal rules, Federal Rule 8, and the rule to allow the separate trial is 14. Is that correct? And we also made, and I think that Representative Mannix and his comments were, we made numerous references to that in the subcommittee hearing, and I think that we should emphasize that as part of the record. So if somebody would like to have further discussion of the bill, 2251.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman. Oh,
I just want to briefly repeat the comments that I made to the subcommittee, and I've received numerous phone calls and messages with regard to my votes in the subcommittee. And I appreciate those, and I love participatory government. Really do. My problems with this bill, and I'm troubled by the bill. I think that juries are concerned, as all of us are, about the crime problem. They're concerned about the drug problem, and they're concerned about the relationship between the two, between drugs and an increasing index crime rate. So I thought that my vote for House Bill 2251 were likely to be effective in terms of those problems, I would be considering this in a different light. My concern about House Bill 2251 is, If the expectation is that by passing this package of measures, we are going to positively impact the system in view of targeting those problems, I think that we do need what Representative Minnis feels will take too much time. What we need is an understanding of how this system works, or at this point does not work, as a whole. And the criminal justice system is very sick. And I think that we have unanimity of opinion from the witnesses who've appeared so far before the committee on that point. I don't think you treat a sick system without a clear understanding of how the system works as a whole. I think that it's problematic whether we really understand that we are discussing here, or whether the people who have called my office to discuss this understand that we are talking about joining of charges and somehow not joining of prior convictions. But the fact that there seems to be a misunderstanding between charges and convictions, I think, goes to one of the problems of this bill, which I mentioned in subcommittee, which is that I think a layperson looking at an instrument that charges 6 or 7 or 8 crimes is going to assume that where there's smoke, there's fire. And the sheer bulk of charges is going to have a prejudicial impact on the decision of a jury. This is not like an impact that would come in like evidence with that kind of impact that evidence that casts light on the facts would prejudice the minds of a jury. But this is the kind of prejudice that really should not have any part in their deliberations, or any basis, should not be the basis of their decision. My last concern really is a concern on how this impacts the sentencing guideline package that's going to come in front of this committee sometime during the year, that is the result of hours and hours of examination of how this system works as a whole. And I really don't know, and I don't think anybody on the committee knows, what happens in terms of sentencing when one of these packages comes down the pike, and what is going to be mandatory upon the judge when the jury comes back with this kind of package. I suspect that the Criminal Justice Council might be able to enlighten us on that, but they didn't have an opportunity to, and I'm opposed to this bill.
Further discussion of the bill? Representative Calhoun?
Yes, just for quickly to get off, I'm going to support this bill. I don't have any serious problems as I had with the previous bill. I do think it's a little unusual that the first thing we go after in the first week of the subcommittee and the criminal subcommittee is to address 3 procedural matters rather than trying to take on the real issue that are facing us in Oregon. We've got 30,000 convicted felons and only about 5,000 of whom are behind bars, and we take off on some easy stuff that we probably don't understand very well because we're not willing to or prepared to address the real problems. And I hope that the Criminal Justice Subcommittee will get onto that, onto the business before them before the session is over, and hopefully very quickly so we can get off of this stuff. Dan Courtney.
Just a quick comment. I was listening very carefully to the cogent arguments made by Representative Bauman in the subcommittee. The one argument that did concern me was the prejudice one, but I believe that there is language, new language, being offered in 2251's lines 20 through 22, which say, if it appears upon motion that there is that the state or defendant is prejudiced by a joinder, it goes on to say the court may order an election or separation, separate trials of counts, or provide whatever other relief justice requires, and I'm very comfortable then with the bill because of that kind of language which is also being added. So I'd like to thank Representative Bauman that in terms of your concern, and rightfully so, of the prejudicial nature, as you say, that new language would take care of a situation where there was possible prejudice, be it to the state or to the defendant. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Clark.
Responding to the comments of Representative Calhoun, I would hope that if any member of this committee does not understand this bill, that they would not cast an affirmative vote, this or any other bill. I don't believe that this is a complex bill, but I echo Representative Calhoun's comments. If we don't understand this bill, we ought not be passing it out of committee.
Representative Mannix.
You guys are full of it today, this morning, aren't you?
I would just like the unanimous consent to clear up some of the language here. You had mentioned changing indictment to accusatory instrument in a couple of instances.
Up on line six, I think.
There's also a reference to indictment in line 18 and in line 5. And I'd like to recommend that we change it to accusatory instrument in all instances.
Any objection to that, then? We should have picked that up.
Otherwise, I have no further.
I might also add, somebody's not pointed out in either testimony that, if I remember my criminal procedure well, if you've joined all these offenses and there's not guilty, that's it for all of them, right? Jeopardy has attached for everything, whereby in the other situation you can shoot at him again and again and again. So this is, to a certain extent, a double-edged sword. That as a prosecutor, if you go out for everything in one indictment, you know.
Yeah. Right, all once the fear comes back, not guilty, that's it.
And a good defense attorney, as you well know, will probably defend on the weak ones and ignore the strong ones, which is, I've seen happen. But that's any further discussion before we move on with somewhat more expeditiously?
Representative Courtney.
Yes.
The definition of inmate assets, when is that determined? Is this forever?
Well, once you lose him, you lose him after he's released from probation. You can never get him then. Once they're discharged, that's it.
The bill earlier makes it clear that when they refer to inmate, they mean someone under the jurisdiction of the Department of Corrections.
Go ahead, please.
I guess this there's a package here that implies something which I anticipate. Hopefully, I'm looking forward to seeing, but I haven't.
Business we've got to take care of, Representative.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm trying to keep him from leaving. Go ahead.
Haven't seen it yet, and that is the commitment by the state to provide some access to employment opportunities and housing for the inmates who we're referring to here. Because right now, I think we're kind of over-optimistic in our expectation that we're going to get anything out of these people who we really create and maintain as indigents, and somehow this engine brings them back to us again and again. So I appreciate the direction here, and I'm looking forward to seeing a series, I guess, of trickle-down bills that will support the ability of these people to reimburse the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, I just want Representative Clark to understand that there's a rulemaking section in this bill, and they are to adopt administrative rules to decide the ability to pay. And part of that procedure will be to issue an order, which can be challenged by the inmate or their representatives. Sometime during that proceeding, their assets would be determined, Representative Clark. I want to be more specific than to say that just under the jurisdiction of the Correctional Department, the jurisdiction, there is also a procedure that will be developed in which at some time they'll decide what kind of assets they have so that this rule can be implemented, this particular bill can be implemented. So there'll be some procedure in there. Do you understand that?
It does. I guess my question is, really has to do with the relationship between this bill and sentencing. If I'm sent to the penitentiary for a year and fined $5,000, when I get to the penitentiary, my assets are going to be tapped to help pay for my care. I've actually been fined more than $5,000.
May I speak to that point?
Sure.
This discussion we had in detail, and that is why I deleted the line two, section two, is that they must consider before issuing this order the relevant factors as set out lines three through lines 5 on page 2. They cannot be oblivious of what you've just said, Representative Clark. And it may very well be after they consider that, Representative Clark, they are unable to order the individual to pay for his or her personal care at the joint. Okay. And I really mean that. And to me, because they put in their funds needed for personal support after release, they had so many factors that if this bill was going to have any meaning at all, if it was going to be any opportunity to get at their assets, they couldn't consider that factor too. In other words, there'd be too many things trying to get at the asset. So the point is fines and other court costs, victims, restitution, which is some of the things that will all have to be considered before they could say, and we want some money to pay for the joint.
Okay, and to just follow up on that, if I could, the question I'm really getting at is who's going to be doing the considering? Will it be the people making the determination as to what this inmate can pay, or in actuality, will it be the judge setting a fine who knows down the road that this particular individual is going to be paying for the cost of his care?
His corrections.
But he's making his point that I was going to follow up on. I realize you're pushed for time. But go ahead. I'd like to hear what he has to say,
okay.
And I'll do my best to answer his concerns.
If I'm a judge and I'm sentencing a criminal defendant, and I'm going to give him prison time and I'm going to fine him, in my mind, I know that he's going to have to pay for his care. He's going to be required to reimburse the state for his care while he's in the institution. I don't have any problem with that philosophically. I need to be clear about that. I want to know, though, who's really going to, what effect this bill is going to have on a judge as he imposes the fine. He knows, and he's got it in the back of his mind now, just like he does when he gives a sentence for time. He knows what the capacities of the prison system are and aren't, and he knows that a 5-year sentence doesn't mean 5 years. And I just wonder, did the subcommittee explore that question?
Was if I might, this bill has been around actually a long time. In fact, Representative Courtney and I sponsored this bill.
I think you might have been on it too. You weren't here.
Sponsored the bill in 1981. And the reality of it is, this will be a relatively rare instance where there are assets available. Relatively rare. So although your point's well taken, I don't think it's going to actually come into the dynamic that much. As we all know who do criminal defense, just not that many criminal defendants have that much money, with the possible exception of some dope dealers, and we've got some other plans to get their money.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
If I may, in addressing that issue, from the testimony, it developed that I brought up the question of the drug dealer who's got a lot of money sitting in the bank that can be reached if that money's found out about, because they review the assets of the inmates while they're there. And this would give them some opportunity to draw from that. Or the inmate who wins the Oregon lottery. But those are very extreme, isolated examples, as the chairman pointed out. There was another more important factor, and it goes to what Representative Baumann was talking about, and that was whether or not we're ever going to see some real heavy-duty prison industries programs if we are to move any goods in interstate commerce from prison industries programs under federal mandates. We have to pay at least minimum wage. And that's where inmates might start accumulating some decent amount of assets. In fact, it's an equivalent wage, not just a minimum wage. And if we see an aggressive prison inmates program, and we've seen some other bills where they're trying to build up corrections industries, the inmates may be able to start building up, in effect, an account at the penitentiary. And right now, they're not allowed to spend more than, as I recall, $2 a day in the canteen. So they would be developing some assets, but they also don't want to just grab all of those assets. They want to give the inmate an opportunity to protect some of those assets, and as Director of Corrections Frankie said, have a grub stake. They know that these people go out the door with almost nothing, and their intention would be to promulgate rules that allow the inmate to have a grub stake, to do something towards victim compensation, do something towards fines, and consider all of those factors. I was impressed with the notion that they're trying to take a comprehensive look at it and do something positive on the prison industry side, too.
Representative Calhoun.
Yes, I certainly appreciate my colleague's comments regarding the people behind bars, and I hope that we take up some of his fine ideas and pursue an aggressive marketing strategy for lottery tickets in the state penitentiary. I think it'd be good policy for the state of Oregon.
Being the one odds.
If you'd been around here a few sessions, you know I try to stay off the topic of lottery money. That's a long story. Any further discussion on the bill? If not, clerk, call roll.
Representative Baum?
Yes.
Representative Baumann?
Yes.
Representative Bryan?
Aye.
Representative Calhoun?
Yes.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Clark?
Aye.
Representative Courtney?
Yes.
Representative Mannix?
Yes.
Representative Miller?
Aye.
Representative Minnis?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye. Bill passes. Thank you very much. Representative Courtney, you'll carry this bill. One further matter of business. Michael Franke's memorial service is going to be held at St. Francis Cathedral, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Monday, January 23rd, 1989, at 2 p.m. I thought it appropriate, perhaps, because the relationship of this committee to corrections and the fact that this committee, as far as I know, was the last committee that Michael Franke ever appeared in front of, that we do something for that service. So I would like your acquiescence to send flowers to that service on in the name of the House Judiciary.
HB 2166 and HB 2167, if I may.
The Representative Mannix moves, asks unanimous consent that he might be recorded as an aye vote on HJR 2, HB
2166, HB 2167.
And HB 2167. Is there any objection? If not, so ordered. And if there's nothing further, well, we have one possible, don't we have a committee bill?
Oh,
yes, we have one possible committee bill. This one is at the request of the Oregon Bankers Association. LC, oh boy, what is this?
There's no LC number.
It does have no LC number, but anyway.
It's just relating to garnishment. Do the best you.
It's relating to garnishment. We'll introduce if there's no objection, we'll introduce the bill as a committee bill at the request of the Oregon Bankers Association. Okay.
I'm assuming it'll be healthy.
Yes. Anything further? Thank you very much.